and Marotta.
Bickley and Marotta mornings.
Arizona Sports. The local sports leader. Bickley Blast.
You know what they say when it comes to firing your head coach? You better have an alternative in mind. You better have a plan B that isn't found on the back of a cocktail napkin. You better have someone who can do a better job. And with that in mind, you have to wonder if this replacement theory might be saving Frank Vogel's job. Because really, what are the alternatives? A 72-year-old Mike D'Antoni, Willie Green if he's fired in New Orleans, or maybe Devin Booker and Kevin Durant are exactly the type of players who might rally around Becky Hammon, who is capable and ready to become the NBA's first female head coach. I've also heard that Vogel might return with a completely reassembled staff of assistants, maybe even bringing in J.J. Redick as lead assistant. Now, that's a very bad idea, even if it's plausible, just like forcing Kevin Young on Vogel's staff last season, because giving Vogel less autonomy and more reason to look over his shoulder is not the answer. Either way, I still reject the idea that Vogel can return with a group that showed a serious lack of respect, focus, and effort towards their head coach. My eyes and my ears tell me that running it back fits Einstein's definition of insanity to a T, unless they trade one of the big three, namely Kevin Durant. Unless all these conversations have led the Suns ownership to realize the biggest issue in Phoenix is not the head coach, it's the roster, stupid! All right, today's Bickley Blast brought to you by my great friends at Chapman BMW, who make luxury attainable. Find them online at chapmanbmw.com.
With Doc Rivers, as you said, taking the Milwaukee job midseason, you know, you only really have Budenholzer out there in terms of readily available recent championship coaches. And so the Suns might say, you know what? We're going to give Frank Vogel another season. They haven't made that decision yet.
Yeah, that's Mark Stein, NBA insider. They have not made that decision yet. There seems to be some rumbling around them, their interwebs, that today could be the day that we get some sort of determination on Frank Vogel. We're both of the camp. Hey, the longer this drags on, probably increases the odds of Frank Vogel being back. There might be some things happening behind the scenes in terms of, okay, we're not changing you.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we're not changing the big three, but here's what does need to change.
Mm-hmm.
Which leads me to the line in your blast, too. The definition of insanity is doing things over and over again and expecting different results.
Mm-hmm.
Does it apply if it's doing the same thing over twice? Are we there yet?
That's a fair question.
I pause if, to say that Vinny, that meets the definition. If nothing changes.
But to me, it's a fair question. But to me, the details, as Devin Booker famously said, the details matter. And some of the ways that disrespect was shown to this head coach via their efforts and via stories in The Athletic and via all sorts of stuff, that makes running it back a second time to me a no-go. That to me, if this team had fought hard and had been connected, I'd say no problems, run it back. But that's not what I saw. That's not what I saw. This is a team where a reserve player had to dress down the entire group for not giving a spit.
And that was after a win.
And the Suns have that on film, by the way. So to me, I think what we're looking at here is if they really, through conversations with principals involved, and again, I'm hoping that they've had meaningful conversations with Devin Booker and Kevin Durant. I would like to know that, because that seems to be very, very important here. And if those two guys, something has to give here. And if those two guys come out and tell Matt Ishbia, look, man, yeah, we weren't connected, but it's, you have to understand, we just were broke. This team was not whole, and we didn't have this or that or this, and it was just very, very difficult to rally around what Coach was saying. So if you give us this and this and this, maybe it'll be different. Okay, I'll listen to that. But again, this the signs that we saw from this team, this is not a team that was feeling their head coach. We're watching connected basketball teams at the moment, the ones that are still alive in the playoffs.
And the Knicks are certainly on that list of connected teams.
Yeah.
What we're seeing from Minnesota has been impressive. A couple of series get underway today, so we'll see what those teams look like.
Do you think what I mentioned in the blast? Do you think that Devin Booker and Kevin Durant, huge supporters of women's basketball, do you think they'd rally around Becky Hammon? Because at some point in time,
it's a fascinating question.
Yeah,
and right now Becky Hammon is on the list, at least as FanDuel sees it, the list of candidates for the Lakers job. I haven't read anything in terms of interest or interviews or anything. She's right now at plus 800, but that list includes Mike Budenholzer, Kenny Atkinson, Ty Lue, Terry Stotts, J.J. Redick, David Adelman, Phil Handy, Rajon Rondo, and Frank Vogel somehow has odds on him to be the next head coach of the Lakers, which... I'm going to throw your money away.
That's fantastic.
Go ahead and throw your money away.
That's fantastic.
The Becky Hammon question is interesting, and I think that would be, a curious hire. And I'm not because she would be the first female head coach, because she has not had an NBA head coaching position. And I think what we saw, and look, Frank Vogel had experience. He's won a championship. And if the Suns decide to move on, you can say, well, he had experience and it didn't work. This looked like such a fragile blend of talent slash personalities that I think you need somebody with a proven track record in the at the NBA level to kind of blend all that together.
There's something to be said for that. One of my basketball sources, I ran my idea about finding the hotshot college offensive guru and plucking him and trying to find gold that way. Gold! And I was told, not with this group, with Kevin Durant. This is not...
The hole I wanted to poke in that is, have you watched college basketball offense? Is there a college basketball offensive guru anywhere on the planet? I don't know.
Fair point.
Kevin Durant also lived through the giving someone a first head coaching job thing with Steve Nash, and it was a big failure.
Right. But see, if you gave the job to Becky Hammon and you got the players to sign off on it, that would become such a talking point that the players in Phoenix would have to rally around it. You would have to rally around that, because so many people, there would be haters, there would be people who'd be waiting for it to fail, there'd be people waiting for her to fail. You know, there's, I don't know if you know this, but there's a level of misogyny in professional sports.
I haven't seen it.
Wait a minute. Hit the breaking news sounder.
Right.
Next thing they're going to tell me there's misogyny outside of sports, too.
Yeah. I've never seen it.
What is this misogyny that you speak of?
Yeah. Who is she? This misogyny.
Exactly.
She was my third grade teacher.
Look.
Is she hot?
Oh, catch the excitement of the Arizona Sports Half Day Club making its comeback May 15th as the D-backs battle the Reds. Snag lower level tickets for only $9.87 by texting half to 620-620. Act fast. Text half to 620-620 to secure your seats. Coming up next, another NBA team had its end of season press conference, and the leadership of that franchise didn't hold back. We'll tell you about more about it next. It's Bickley and Marotta Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Come on. I'm burning. Come on. Come on.
Arizona Sports.
Ball in.
Floor Birds with Bickley and Marotta.
Why'd you dunk it? Right this face.
Video.
You got it?
Yep.
1, 2, 3, action. If I was playing, Boston would be at home.
That's Jimmy Butler in a video that came out on May 4th over the weekend after the Heat were eliminated in 5 games, saying that if he was playing, which he didn't play in the first round for the Miami Heat, the Boston Celtics would be at home. He went on to say New York would be at home as well, but there are some expletives in there that I couldn't edit out in time. Well, that obviously got a response, because the Celtics didn't have much trouble with the Miami Heat, and they were shorthanded. They didn't have Butler. They didn't have Terry Rozier in that series. But the Celtics also the superior team. We would all agree with that. Yesterday at the Miami Heat's press conference, wrapping up their season, Pat Riley, the head of basketball operations, He said this about Jimmy Butler's comments.
You know, for him to say that, is that Jimmy trolling or is that Jimmy serious? If you're not on the court playing against Boston or on the court playing against the New York Knicks, you should keep your mouth shut and your criticism of those teams.
Ooh, that's what accountability sounds like.
Wow. Pat Riley also said this about the subject of giving Jimmy Butler a contract extension.
Well, I mean, if he requests, we can either accept or we can say we're going to think about it or we've not made a decision on it. I think you can make too much out of this. He's still got 2 years left on a contract. Theoretically, he's got a player opt. But that's something that we have to give some real thought to based on a lot of factors. I don't want to go through the litany of factors right now because they all blow up into different hypotheticals, but yeah, that's a big decision on our part to commit that kind of those kinds of resources unless you have somebody who's really going to be there, you know, available every single night.
Wow, Jimmy Butler has not been available every night.
How about that, huh? First of all, Pat Riley is a true legend. What he has done in this game from L.A. to New York to Miami has been incredible.
Yeah.
For him to be able to just state clarity and tell hard truths like that to your fan base, that is quite something. Now, I'm sure Jimmy Butler doesn't like hearing that, but Pat Riley's exactly the kind of guy who's going to think that's kind of Bush. Don't tell us what we would have done had you been playing when you're not healthy too much. Don't, because we don't roll like that.
Yeah, last year, I mean, the Heat made this improbable run all the way to the finals, and Jimmy Butler was at times unstoppable, at times unavailable.
Yeah,
in that run for the Miami Heat. So even last year, when things were going swimmingly for the Heat, as an 8 seed that made it to the finals, he wasn't always there. So I understand the frustration for Pat Riley. And look, let's localize this story. I did not watch the entire Pat Riley press conference.
Mm-hmm.
These are the two stories that came out the most. He also talked about Tyler Hero needing to be less fragile, which, again, would raise a lot of eyebrows. Those are the ways to pacify a frustrated fan base.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked a lot about this last week, coming out of that Wednesday press conference that the Suns held with Matt Ishbia taking the podium first and then James Jones, which I thought was, you know, one of the missteps. I thought, you know, you probably have a unified front with both men speaking together and sharing the same message. But I thought the Suns fan base was probably going into that thinking, all right, we want to hear from this aggressive owner that this was not good enough.
Right.
That this was unacceptable and it will be better going forward. And they got a very patient tone from mm-hmm. Matt Ishbia, maybe for the first time since he took over ownership of the team in 15 months. You know, there's right ways, there's wrong ways, there's ways in between. Perception matters in all of this, mm-hmm. And I think if Matt Ishbia would have said or struck a similar tone without even getting into individual players like Pat Riley did, but just generally speaking, like, this is not the standard we want to set for the Phoenix Suns, we'd be having a lot of different conversations.
I think maybe the inexperience, the ownership inexperience at how to handle the wreckage of a playoff gone wrong might have showed there. I think clearly what James Jones had to say afterwards kind of doubled down on the hilarity of it all, right? The maximizing Kevin Durant that kind of put the team through the ringer. And then, yeah, like I said, this is an owner who came to town swinging for the fences. And he went through a period of time where he was wildly adored and cheered for good reason. He has stacked a lot of victories from G League team to new headquarters. You could rattle them all off. The idea of committing all his resources to winning is something that we are always going to be grateful for. But I do think there's something to be said for kind of knowing the moment and realizing how to navigate this. And I think that's kind of one of the flaws of this. I think that if Matt Ishbia and the regime below him spent the weekend canvassing players and it change their view of Frank Vogel. That stuff, that information should have, they should have gotten that before meeting with the media. Because it seemed like they created unnecessary anxiety.
Well, let's look at the sort of uniqueness of the way the press conference happened anyway, that it was the owner and the GM. Most of these exit press conferences from teams are the GM and the head coach.
Mm-hmm.
True.
How many team owners are doing their team exit press conferences?
Yeah, I don't know if Mickey Arison had a press conference in Miami.
Is he a bomber? I don't think.
No, I mean, if those happen, I'm not aware of them.
But that's sort of like the power structure here is Ishbia, sort of like Mark Cuban was for so many years with Dallas, that he's more than just the owner.
Mm-hmm.
He's much more a decision maker here.
Yeah,
I'm sure that the off the record stuff that followed the Suns out of the season, the piece in The Athletic illustrating a team that was rolling their eyes at their head coach who was trying to be something he's not. He's got to read that and go, where's that coming from? Then the report that it's Looney Tunes over here, that this is like Dan Gilbert before Dan Gilbert learned restraint. That's got to bother Matt Ishbia, right? If you put together an organization and you're real proud of the resources you poured into it, you know how owners get when the first time they encounter internal leaks.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the first big move that Matt Ishbia made was trading for Kevin Durant. That was mm-hmm. widely regarded as a Matt Ishbia orchestrated move. And mm-hmm.
And it was.
It's been admitted. You know, what happened last summer with Chris Paul getting traded for Bradley Beal, it is believed to be mostly a Matt Ishbia production.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got 1 year of sample now, and it didn't work out to anybody's liking. But what those two moves have done is really put the onus on the basketball people now. The big splashes are over. This is all about ripple effects and pieces around the edges that need to improve. So the pressure is on, you know, James Jones and his staff to make that work.
Mm-hmm.
The big splashes haven't turned out to be as big as we thought they were initially.
And the question becomes, so if you want to sell the idea on we're running this back because we just didn't get it right last time, where does the leadership come from this time? Because one of the narratives, and I don't know whether this is true or not, but I've read this in a couple of different places. Kevin Durant expressed unhappiness about how he is being used in the offense. We've seen that a couple of different places. Most recently, Draymond Green, who got very specific in terms of offensive motions that the Suns do not use, that play right into Kevin Durant's game. And he said it in a very mocking way. The counter to that is the Suns going, okay, well, that's nice to know. It would have been nice if Kevin would have told us that. It would be nice if he would have expressed that kind of unhappiness to us. Mm-hmm. So maybe we could have, you know, fixed it. That's the leadership vacuum I'm talking about. Who's going to solve that? Will Devin Booker step up and go, okay, I'll do it. I'll be that guy. We all want him to be.
Yeah. And I think to a certain degree he has, but and without knowing the inner workings of it, from the outside, it looks like he hasn't done that, or at least it's being presented that mm-hmm. he hasn't done that to a large enough degree. And that probably
people have wondered when Devin Booker, because the thing about Devin Booker, as we all know, he's seemed detached this past year, more so than ever before. There are anecdotal things we could cite for you. We're not going to do that right now. You're going to have to trust us on that. But the fact remains that when he has spoken publicly about the Suns' failures, he's been very clear that it's about game plan discipline. It's about attention to detail. Uh-huh. It's talent alone won't get the job done. There is very little in what Devin Booker says that would lead you to follow that trail of crumbs to Frank Vogel. There's people who say you could follow it maybe to KD, but that's also part of this. People in the NBA treat KD with a lot of deference. It wasn't until that last playoff game when I saw Devin Booker losing his ever-loving mind on the court at KD.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be a difficult thing for a guy like Devin Booker to go, yo, you're doing this wrong, KD. That's not how we roll here. Yes, Kevin Durant you're talking to. These are the things that you got to work out, man.
Yeah. Certainly. Coming up next, one sports book has said Kyler Murray is the best current quarterback in the NFC West. Are they right? What about the other divisions? We'll get into all of it next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Arizona Sports, the local sports leader, Bickley and Marotta. Hash marks.
Yeah, the draft is in the rearview mirror. Mini camps, before we know it, OTAs will be here, Bick. Before you know that.
Yeah.
Vacation season, right into training camp, and the football season will be here before you know it. Eh, maybe not.
I do think it'll be here before you know it.
Well, I mean, in the last few years, we've had a little bit longer of a Suns playoff run to distract us from it. That's not happening this year, so this might seem like a little bit longer. But certainly optimism, a lot of optimism with the Cardinals about the quarterback position. Kyler Murray coming back, playing the last 8 games last year, performed well. The Cardinals were much better offensively when he was out there. Didn't put up the gaudiest of numbers, but I think there were other factors involved in that.
Mm-hmm.
We brought this up earlier in the show. FanDuel put out a post last week on social media that picked the best quarterback in each division of the NFL, and their choice for the NFC West, with a backhanded compliment, was Kyler Murray. Of course, they portrayed him as half his face in the frame to indicate that he's, we didn't know this, he's 5'10". Did you know that? Did you also know this, Bick? That is not the prototypical size for an NFL quarterback.
I've heard that once or twice.
Yeah. I'm surprised that hasn't been a bigger storyline in Kyler Murray's career.
Listen, I think it's a victory that graphic that FanDuel put out that we have talked about, where they're really trolling Kyler Murray because of his size.
Yeah.
It's the clapback shows that joke is old.
That's very
like
old.
I said, it's like an Andy Reid barb in the sports kebab. What are you shaking your head for, Jarrett? You heard us go.
No, but I know. That's why I freshened it up with Adam Silver jokes as well.
I went on record earlier and said, you know, if I was in charge of picking the best quarterback in each division, Kyler Murray would not be my pick right now. Certainly has the potential to be that.
Yeah.
And I think at one point recently probably was.
Mm-hmm.
Brock Purdy would be my pick right now, because you have to consider results. You have to consider statistics and eliminate the system quarterback, you know, label that gets put on some guys. Mm-hmm. Brock Purdy was amazing. Last year was an MVP candidate.
Yes.
You can't say that about anybody else in that division.
And I'm going to go with Matthew Stafford, but I respect your choice.
All right. The other divisions, I thought these were interesting. In the AFC East, their pick was Josh Allen. It's a pretty strong quarterback division. You got Josh Allen, Aaron Rodgers, Tua Tagovailoa, Drake May.
Right.
Aaron Rodgers coming up, I mean, certainly the most accomplished, but coming off a major injury.
Yes.
And he's, you know,
here and
north
now,
of 40.
Yeah. Here and now, I think Josh Allen is the better player.
Okay, so we're agreed there.
Okay.
In the AFC North, they picked Joe Burrow of the Cincinnati Bengals. That is not my pick in that division. Lamar Jackson's a two-time MVP.
Mm-hmm. That's where I'm going to.
And Joe Burrow seems to be high on everybody's next list. Like, he's the next quarterback that's going to break through. Hasn't done it yet. Has taken the Bengals to a Super Bowl and has had some injury issues. So I'm giving the nod to Jackson.
And people will say Lamar Jackson hasn't broken through yet because he's never been to a Super Bowl, where Joe Burrow has. I don't put this last playoff loss to the Chiefs so much on Lamar Jackson. They gave up on the run game so fast, and the whole thing just got sideways on him. I'm with you. Lamar Jackson's my pick.
Two MVPs are two MVPs.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah, there's not a lot of guys that can make that claim, and Lamar Jackson's one of them. AFC South, they have C.J. Stroud as the pick going into his second year in Houston over Trevor Lawrence, Anthony Richardson, Will Levis, two second-year guys who didn't have great rookie seasons for different reasons.
Yes.
I think Stroud's the pick.
Stroud's the pick.
Although, I think this is a big year for Trevor Lawrence, I think.
I agree.
They got a pretty good football team.
Mm-hmm. And he has been really all over the map.
He kind of has. AFC West, Patrick Mahomes is their pick. How can you go against it?
Mm-hmm.
Although, Justin Herbert, I think this is a big year for him, too.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Aiden O'Connell in Vegas and Bo Nix in Denver.
Yeah. Oh, man.
All right.
That Bo Nix thing in Denver. This is going to be very interesting to watch to see if he's going to be able to save Sean Payton from Sean Payton, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I think Patrick Mahomes and the fact that the Chiefs are attempting this season. This is going to be a gigantic story, folks. When we get around to the fall and the Chiefs being able to three-peat, which has never happened in the NFL.
Another division where I have a different pick than what FanDuel put out is the NFC East. Mm. They picked Dak Prescott. I picked Jalen Hurts.
So do I. Look at you and me.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not like I hate Dak Prescott, but I think Jalen Hurts, I think he's going to have a bounce back year. I just think he's better. I think he's more clutch.
Yeah, like Burrow, he took his team to a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Which Prescott has never. So if you're going to count it on one and not the other one.
Dak Prescott is consistently good statistically, but what does it lead to? And we can agree, again, that Jalen Hurts had a down year last year after being an MVP candidate the year before. But I give him the nod. And then I think this is interesting, too, because Jaden Daniels in Washington, I'd give him, if I was ranking all four quarterbacks in that division, which I did, I'd go Hurts, Prescott, Daniels, then Daniel Jones.
Jaden Daniels above a guy who's been in the league 3 years.
And whose team decided not to draft a quarterback because they're sticking with him.
Daniel Jones is going into a sixth
year. You know what? This is one of the things that I find interesting about football and kind of ridiculous about football. The Atlanta Falcons have been skewered as the clown show of the draft for what they did with Michael Penix Jr. after signing Kirk Cousins. Yet, the Giants went and doubled down on a mediocre quarterback, and that's being kind, by giving him another weapon. Who really is the clown show?
The Falcons.
The Falcons are.
Okay.
They didn't need to give all that money to Kirk Cousins if they were going to draft the quarterback that high.
And let's face it, the Giants,
I think
mistakenly
it's,
so, but they paid Daniel Jones.
I think it's more stupid to double down on a bad quarterback than to double down on the amount of quarterbacks you have. Just me.
Well, it's stupid in a different way, for sure.
Daniel Jones, the last 2 years, he had the season 2 years ago to get paid. The Giants made it to the second weekend of the playoffs. Last year was a step back, injuries, all that.
Mm-hmm.
This is it. This is his year to announce himself one way or the other. I would still point and laugh at the Falcons more than the Giants in that scenario. NFC North, they've got Jordan Love, Green Bay. I don't.
Not
have
me.
That. I've got Jared Goff. Is that who you got?
Yes.
Jared Goff is so disrespectful.
It's very disrespectful. And you know what? Look, Jordan Love is very good in a playoff game. Not to sound like Wolf, but I got to see more from that kid before I anoint him.
Yeah. In the last division, the NFC South, they've got Kirk Cousins for Atlanta now. Based on the other quarterbacks in the division, even coming off an injury.
Well, Mayfield's not bad.
I had Baker Mayfield second on my pecking order, okay. But he's not. I don't think he's better than Kirk Cousins. And I'm not a huge Kirk Cousins fan, although he's grown on me for the last couple years.
AFC North is the most loaded with quarterback division.
Yeah, Jackson, Burrow, Deshaun Watson, Russell Wilson fourth.
That's great. That's great.
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting exercise, but we were in more alignment together than we were with the FanDuel.
Who would you like to see on Hard Knocks this year? What football team is going to have the most conflict and drama?
I've got a clear answer.
Oh, you do?
Don't care. Hard Knocks put its skis on and jump that shark while wearing a leather jacket.
How about? I think I'm going to vote for the Pittsburgh Steelers to watch that whole Russell Wilson, Mike Tomlin, City of Pittsburgh thing. That's where I'm going.
Coming up next, has anybody checked on Jamal Murray this morning?
Oh, boy.
Are we sure he's okay? That and more from the NBA playoffs straight ahead here on Bickley and Marotta Mornings. Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Hey, it's Luke. The Diamondbacks are on to Cincinnati, so can they take Sunday's offensive outburst with them? We get going at 10 a.m. It's Wolf and Luke on Arizona Sports.
Yeah, we just got beat up in our building. We got embarrassed in front of our fans. The good thing is we don't play till Friday. We have a chance.
Oh, I love technology. Let me try that again.
Yeah, we just got beat up in our building. We got embarrassed in front of our fans. The good thing is we don't play on Friday. We have a chance to kind of get away and think about what we want to do moving forward. And I'm not worried about anything other than trying to win game three.
It's Michael Malone, the head coach of the Denver Nuggets, on getting embarrassed in front of the home fans at Ball Arena. They got housed, and they lost their cool on so many different fronts last night. I don't know if you saw this. I retweeted somebody last night who, because it was my favorite tweet of the night. The Nuggets were wearing their alternate jerseys that have the number 5,280, meaning Mile High City, on their jersey.
Yes.
At one point of the game, this tweet said, they're taking these uniforms a little bit too literally. They were down 80-52 at one point.
That's fantastic.
I thought it was really funny, but part of the embarrassment, not only getting beat, mm-hmm. but how you conduct yourselves. I thought Michael Malone lost his cool. Jamal Murray throwing not one, but two different items on or near the floor while he was sitting on the bench because he was frustrated with how things were going. That is absolutely unacceptable. And Michael Malone was asked about it. He didn't know about it in real time, then was told it was Jamal Murray. And he said, look, it's dangerous. It's irresponsible. There's talk about penalties coming from the league now for Jamal mm-hmm. Murray. Is suspension in order? Look, if a fan throws something onto the court, they're kicked out of the arena.
That's a good point. That's a really good point. And that heating pad he threw into the lane, that could have been a real issue for somebody if they had landed on that thing and then rolled an ankle or
sprained a knee. Yeah, I think it was Michael Porter Jr. that saw it and kind of kicked it out of the way pretty quickly.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
And Draymond Green on his podcast says, everybody's calling for a suspension now. It's amazing to me how many people just start automatically calling for suspensions. Not automatically. He threw an item onto the court.
Yeah.
During play.
Right, exactly. There should be some accountability here. So I think when you talk about last night's game was not just a revelation. For them to do that without Rudy Gobert is staggering to me. For them to do it to the defending champions is going to leave a mark in Denver. I mean, how do you go and win a title one year and then get swept the very next? Yuck. But what it did more to the point is it stamped this Timberwolves team as this might be their year right now. They might not just be a team on the rise. This might be a team capable of winning it all.
Yeah.
I think I see this entire country falling in love with Anthony Edwards. Are you coming around on him a little bit? Are you starting to, or is he in the Luka category for you?
No. Okay. No. Luka's in a category unto himself. It's impossible not to watch and marvel at what he's doing right mm-hmm. now. And I've struggled with this because I was critical of Anthony Edwards. And again, I'll admit it. I'm guilty of forming opinions on players based on what they do against the Suns because I'm just too busy to watch NBA basketball every night. I enjoy the product, but I'm not, I'm not watching a Minnesota Sacramento game on a Tuesday night
in
February. I'm just not doing it.
I'm with you.
So I base my opinions on what is done against the Suns. And mm-hmm. Anthony Edwards, not just this year, throughout his career, pretty much sucked against the Suns.
It's true. So no, the stats back that up.
When I watch him closely, and I'm watching closely this series, it's impossible not to appreciate the ascension. Now, you also know me as what I like and what I don't like from individual athletes. He is very demonstrative, very showy, and never shuts up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a huge fan of that kind of stuff. You know that. But the play itself, I mean, the elevation he's made this mm-hmm. postseason in his play,
yeah.
He is an absolute killer right now.
Yeah, and he's such a willing defender. He's got such an aggression about him. That's what I love. The attack mentality that he has, that's where the Kobe Michael thing comes into play. And if this kid wins a championship at 22, whoa.
He's taking the leap into superstardom right now. Mm-hmm. We're watching it happened right now where he's ascending to a different level. Him and, to me, Jalen Brunson mm-hmm. are the two faces of the playoffs so far
I agree, taking the next
level.
And Jalen Brunson is now, he's joined a very small club of guys that have scored 40 points or more in four straight playoff games. He did it again last night. We've spent a lot of time talking about the terrible game from last night. The Knicks are must-see television.
Mm-hmm.
Their playoff games so far, all seven of them, six against Philly, one against Indiana, have been great games. I think last night's game was marred, in my opinion, by some over-officiating at the end. I hated the illegal screen call on Miles Turner.
Listen, and Indiana Pacers fans, I know this because I used to work in Chicago. I don't know if you ever heard that before. I used to cover the Bulls, and the Knicks and the Pacers would always be in our universe. Mm-hmm. And when the Knicks and the Pacers used to play in the past, when it was Reggie Miller and all, it used to always be the Knicks versus the Hicks. That's what they would call it. And people in Indiana were convinced they would never get a fair shot against a big market team against, like, the New York. The Hicks against the Knicks. Tell me last night didn't feel that way. That blocking call was ridiculous. There were people who were mad at the Aaliyah Edwards call. Remember that call against UConn? When it was clearly an illegal block on many different levels? Last night was nothing more than Dante DiVincenzo selling a call, and the refs bought at that point in time.
And it was directly after the kicked ball that wasn't a kicked ball.
Yes.
That I don't mind them missing. That you can understand them missing. That call, that looked like a team getting hooked. And I don't generally buy into that stuff, but that blocking call was ridiculous.
It also goes back to what the review system is right now and the challenge system in the NBA. The Pacers on the missed. I mean, Aaron Nesmith hits that with his hand. They call it a kicked ball. So it resets the shot clock to 14 for the Knicks. They retain possession. He didn't kick the ball, but it's not reviewable. Why? There was so much time spent at the table and on the monitors at the end of that game, but you can't review that call? It's like there's only certain plays we can deem
important. I never understand that logic.
And I was intrigued by the challenge system. I was encouraged that the NBA gave teams now two challenges if you get the first one right. I might be going the other way. I might just be, if you're going to have officials and they can only really review four calls during the course of a game, what are we doing? Just play.
Listen, I do believe there's a line. I do believe there's a line between stopping the game too long and too often. But at the same time, if you're going to do it, why would you categorize calls that you can't review? Yeah. If the whole point is to keep egregious mistakes from determining the outcome of games.
That being said, the Knicks, Josh Hart might my new number one on my list of NBA players that I like that don't or have never played for the Suns. That guy is ridiculous. Plays every minute of every game. Does all the little things you need to do to win a game. He's an emotional leader.
He's Mr. Coast to Coast.
He gets
the ball and he just goes.
Yeah. One thing this has shown, you could see why those Villanova teams were so good. Those three guys and Mikal Bridges.
Mm-hmm. And the guy that hit the
game
winner.
Who's that last guy you mentioned? I'm not familiar with that name.
Mikal Bridges?
Sorry about that. The phone.
Coming up next, Aaron Gazelle will take us through some social studies on this Tuesday morning. It's Bickley and Murata mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Hey, Drew Scott here. And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.